Hello and welcome to Perception Check. I don't think any of us have a can of beer.
My bottle's already open.
Okay, so that will be good enough. Can you guys all hear me okay?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, cool. Cool. Sound handsome, all that. That's good. Oh, baby! Alright, anyway, this is a bonus episode. We're all kind of getting together as we're leading up to the finale. Matt is not feeling well, as you'll probably be able to tell, and we are very sorry, Matt, that the cold got you, and we hope you feel better.
I am death.
The destroyer of worlds.
The destroyer of worlds. All right, well, I'm Corey, who is normally your DM. We also, do you guys want to introduce yourself as just normal people and not D&D players?
I'm Adrian, and I usually play River.
I'm Gabriel, and I'm,
hi,
I usually play Matt.
I'm Josh, and I always play Erebus, whether we're playing or not, because I'm so far into this shit.
I'm Chris, I play Topher, and periodically DM.
Alright, well, for this bonus episode, it's going to be pretty chill, just kind of chatting. I'm going to ask you guys about your characters and what inspired you to make them, and I'll talk about some of my creations and why I wanted to make those, and some boneheaded dumb things I have done over this campaign that I've had to kind of write around. We're also going to talk about everything that we've done wrong so far. So if you guys can remember anything that I'm missing, because I had a long list. I listened to every episode, and I wrote down everything we've done wrong according to the D&D rules, and then I lost it. So then I had to make a new one from memory, and it doesn't look nearly as long as the other one did. So bear with me. And also, I'm going to fill you guys in on some cool, like, little deleted scenes, like stuff I've rewritten that you guys missed because I either thought it was going to be too boring or too much of a bummer. So there's going to be some fun stuff in here. First, I think we should start off with going through a quick list of all the stuff we've done wrong in this show. I think if you're a listener and you listen and you're familiar with D&D, you probably got really frustrated with us.
definitely not a short list, Corey. I've been listening back through all of the episodes, and oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's quite a bit. First of all, dual wielding was a problem.
That was the biggest thing in the beginning. All I knew was that you're not supposed to be able to use a shield if you're dual wielding, but I was doing it wrong too, because you're not supposed to add your strength modifier to both swings, and you're only supposed to get it in one of your attacks and not both, isn't that right? The dual wielding.
Yeah, the strength modifier, if you are proficient in dual wielding, applies to both hands. But what it is you get an attack with one arm, and then as a bonus attack, you use your left arm. So when you have two attacks, that's two right arm attacks, but the bonus action of your left arm jumps in, you just get one of those. Anyway, we did that wrong for a long time, because we would just do one attack as two swings. And then, yeah, so that got all kind of jumbled.
Although I'm still not, like, completely positive about that.
Hold on, Josh, real quick. Sounds like you're in a swimming pool.
Okay. Is this better?
Okay. Yes.
So I took the dual-wielding feat, which I think grants me my plus on both, but I'm still honestly not sure.
No, yeah, it grants you your plus on both. It's if you're trying to dual-wield and you're not... specifically have that feat, then you're going to have a little bit of a disadvantage swinging with your offhand. Also, there was mention that standing up from being prone would cost an your whole move action, and it only costs half. So that's another one that didn't last too long. I think we figured that one out pretty quickly. Stealth, I would like to go down the line and get all your guys' opinion on stealth, because for, I think, most of this season, we've seen it basically as invisibility. River, what's your thoughts on stealth? Because you've helped us out a lot with some of your spells.
Well, it depends on the situation you're in, whether you're in dim light or bright light, or where, you know, what you're using to hide behind. And we just did it as you could walk in a room stealth and no one would ever see you.
Yeah, it's like the blanket over the head
approach. And what you're wearing, we didn't factor like any of that stuff into our stealth.
No.
But, you know, I do have that spell that grants us help on stealth.
Mm-hmm.
But we just used it as, yeah, we definitely blanketed stealth under invisibility.
which makes no sense.
No.
So, Topher, what does stealth mean to you?
I think stealth is if no one is looking at you, they won't look at you. Does that make sense? Like, if you succeed at stealth, I think it's how you're supposed to treat it. I think as when I DM, it's a little bit simpler to be like, oh, now I don't have to worry about them alerting anyone, you know? So I just, like, let them, you know, let the characters do whatever they want. And that's probably not the best case.
One nice thing is that what we are rolling out for the finale and what we will be doing kind of going forward is we will be utilizing Roll 20. So our first jump at it is going to be for the finale, which should be interesting. But there we'll be able to see, like, oh, these people aren't looking at us, so we'll roll stealth, and then maybe we can go behind them. Like, all that stuff we'll be able to figure out visually, so we don't have to go too much into it.
Yeah.
But we'll know we're at least doing it right to the situation.
Even the last round we played with the map and stuff, which I think helped us follow the rules a little bit. Because we could actually visualize where we are with distance and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Okay. I have another one here. Perception check. We had some issue with just a lot with environment description. That's one thing I've tried to be better at is explaining things more. I don't give a ton of detail, which I think leads to a lot of rolls for all sorts of checks. Because I'm not like, oh, there's a friggin' thing there that you could look at. Instead of like, oh, I need to look around to see if there's a cabinet there. But it's like, dude, you should know there's a cabinet there. Like, that was my bad for not describing the room.
Right, passive perception.
Yeah. Yeah.
But honestly, the map will help out a lot with that stuff. As far as, like, ambient things in the room. Like, oh, there's a rug on the floor. Like...
Yeah, you
know, there's a dresser over here, there's a bed here, like, we can actually, like, visually see those, so that makes it a lot easier to roll a perception check and be like, I want to look around the rug, versus, like, I want to look around the room, and you're like, alright, there's a bed in it, and it's like, okay, what else? Like, you should have at least seen that there was a rug there, right? Like...
Yeah. We also have, playing as Lazarus in the first couple episodes, I wasn't leveled up enough to have two attacks, and I thought when you rage, you get an additional attack. That's not true. I also totally didn't notice or pay attention to the fact that while in rage, your attack does extra damage, so I was doing a lot less damage than I should have, and I forgot about all the resistances you get when you rage. So I was completely wrong there. We had some issues with Arcana check, and, like, detect magic. I still get those mixed up. Like, we kind of flip them back and forth on what's an arcana check and what's a detect magic. So, Matt, if you're up for it, I'm trying to use your real names.
Yeah.
Matt, if you're up for it, can you describe the difference between the two?
If I remember correctly, arcana will give me type of magic, school of magic, and, like, source of magic, but it doesn't give me really a whole lot of detail. It just tells me if it is magic. And then detect magic gives me more detail, and, like, then maybe I can try to figure out whether or not I can dispel it and that kind of stuff.
Josh, Erebus, does that sound about right? Because you're working with spells now, too.
So detect magic will give you the spell school, but not necessarily the level or the, like, the actual spell that is being cast. So it will literally just give you a school, and then I believe detect magic arcana will give you, like, the light around. Or is that the detect magic? I'm honestly still kind of confused about that.
Okay, yeah, I think detect magic does give some sort of aura around magical objects as well, if I remember correctly.
Me multiclassing, I didn't realize that my Eldritch Glass leveled with my character level, not with my warlock level. So I was using that completely wrong up until the last episode that came out as well.
While we're talking to you, Josh, counterspell.
I didn't want to talk about it.
The counterspell, so if it's above, if it's below third level, counterspell works instantly. If it is above third level, it is a DC 10 plus the spell's level versus your spell cost and modifier.
Like, which would be for a wizard intelligence and like a correct. Bard yes. charisma. So, Matt, is your intelligence at 20?
Yes.
Okay, so that gives you a plus four. So you would roll and then add 4.
I don't know. I think that's right.
No, 20 gives you plus 5.
Oh, it's a plus 5. Well, either way, it goes off of that specific modifier that you use to cast spells. Because the spellcasting modifier gives you a bunch of bonus for an actual spell attack. But it goes off of your base stats. So, intelligence for Geralt. So he would actually roll and do plus 5 since he's at a 20. And then that would have to be 10 plus whatever that spell level was. So it makes it a lot more fair and a chance to miss, because otherwise a wizard, if they were using their spellcasting modifier, they could just go cancel on right. like absolutely everything because of that massive modifier.
Well, and we need to talk about we've done better at action reaction and
yeah, reactions action. Was one we had trouble with also, like what spells are reactions?
Do one counter spell per round of encounters. It has to go around a
yes,
full...
And it uses the...
You. What, John?
So, like, it uses the bonus action. So, like, if I was to do a counter spell, it would use my bonus action, which means that my... If I was going to do a melee attack, it would only be 2, not 3, because the third...
If you were, dual wielding.
Yep, exactly.
All right, so I had reactions in there. We kind of touched on that. We did standing up from prone, stealth, perception check. Was there any listening through that you guys caught that we didn't talk about?
I'm sure there's a lot, but I just don't remember specifically.
Yeah, well, I have my list. It was a good list.
Actually, like we need to use cover better. Have descriptions of distances. The cloth-wearing people, myself and River, basically. Or not cloth, but lower AC, easier to
hit yeah.
targets are using our range effectively, because we only have really one player, which is Josh,
mm-hmm.
and Lazarus, of course, but two players that are melee range users,
yeah.
and the rest of us should really be at a distance, and we shouldn't be getting hit very often. Especially yeah. if you're using cover, and cover is something that I've been researching as well. So half cover, three quarter cover, and full cover.
As far as like rules, if you say you're going to do a sleight of hand check to take something out of someone's pocket, like if you roll and you roll a 4, like you still tried that.
Yeah, that's something I think we've already fixed, though. I don't think we have to worry about that.
Yeah, that was just something like listening through the. I think I'm on episode 14 or something, listening back through,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, "Yeah, you tried a lot of things. Like we all tried a lot of things, and we're like, well, never mind. I didn't do that. It didn't roll well."
Yeah, no, that is definitely something that we used to do a lot. I think we've tried getting better about that, and like you know, there's consequences to our actions. We can't mulligan everything. So we'll stop there for the stuff we did wrong. I just want to say that when I started DMing, that was literally like my first time pretty much. I did one short game that wasn't recorded, but it was just a really short thing. We had just gotten into actually playing. Chris was the one with the most experience. And how many times had you DM'd, Chris?
Never.
There we go.
I played a few times before.
On that note, like, regardless of whether, like, how many rules that we fucked up or anything else, like, the amount of storytelling that you did and how you put things together was absolutely fantastic for never having done this before.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I just want to applaud you for that, as far as just building this epic story that we all get to be a part of and having all these twists and turns and being emotional in this story that you built for us, as far as you know, really diving deep into our characters.
Yeah, well, you know, you're kind of jumping ahead, because at the end of this I was going to have a full 15 minutes of you guys telling me what a great job I'm doing, so I guess we could just do that now. Yeah, the story has been interesting, and I'll actually go into that a little bit if you would like. When I first wrote this, I had about 4 sessions planned, and I had no full story. I knew that we were going to spin off and I was going to DM, so I decided to kill Lazarus, my character, because I thought it'd just be easier. But I wanted to give him something that tied in with his backstory. So when, Geralt, you blew up Lazarus and he made you kill him, in my notes, the sorcerer was dead. Like, that was Lazarus's last move, sacrificing himself to kill this sorcerer and end all that.
Which, can I just say that we all kind of still hate you for killing Lazarus?
So that was, like, the first thing that I had written as, like, a thing to do. And then all the other sessions I had written based on ability checks that we hadn't really used or explored yet. So if you think about it, there was the doppelganger episodes, which was all about, like, insight and perception and all of those items in terms of, like, talking to people and having ability to use those. You guys didn't really use them because we never had used them before. I built that doppelganger story based on those abilities.
Interesting.
It's also, we really fucked up, like, multiple times, and Royal killed the little girl. Yeah. River, little girl.
Yeah, I had that totally planned, and that was going to go a lot worse in the original notes, because
I was supposed to be the killer.
Yeah, I was setting that up.
Yeah, just to bring it up again, River killed a little girl.
Yeah, the whole...
the poor, defenseless little girl.
The whole idea that I wanted to do was have this shape-shifting creature to where there was someone that was running and someone that you guys had, and you had to figure out which one was the right one. And if you were too aggressive to the one who was running, they were going to die. But if you were able to figure out the one in the bottom, you could have saved everyone. I thought all of you would go after the running one. I didn't think you guys would split up. So the idea was, if you followed the running one and you all, like, attacked her and killed her, you would come back and the doppelganger would have killed everybody in the chairs and they would have just been dead. There would be no going back and everyone would have died and you guys would have killed the doppelganger. And I had scenes written out where you went back to the town and had to explain to their families what happened.
So you changed it, or you left it open to...
I left it open because you guys split up, which totally threw me. Because if you chased her down and you found out that she wasn't the doppelganger, you guys would go back and he would basically be holding them hostage and give you an opportunity to save everyone. So that was, like, the flip side. But you guys split up and I was like, well, crap. And so on the spot, I had to figure out all the, okay, so you guys are doing this and interrogating the doppelganger and then also chasing down the girl, so I'm trying to figure out what to do there. And then you guys let the doppelganger go, and you guys are all, like, Erebus is walking all of them back to the town, and then you guys are going after the girl who was running, and I was like, oh man, how do I do this? So all of that was completely improv'd. Like, the fight between Erebus and the doppelganger, where he broke Greg's neck and did, like, all this stuff, which, that's another thing, Greg, alchemist. That was his name, written down, Alchemist. And I said, but some people call me Greg, as a funny little joke, just offhand. And then everyone called him Greg, and I was like, crap, why'd I say that? Because now there's two Gregs.
I wondered why you said that.
Damon went back and revived the little girl, but we never even talked about the fact that Alchemist / Greg got revived and then was back.
The first person David Horselhoff helps and saves his alchemist. Right after the fight, he throws himself on the burning doppelganger and gets himself out of the chair, or, like, some sort of fire or something. I think you guys burned the doppelganger. He throws himself on there, heals himself, and goes, what happened? And he was a paladin. I always had that in my mind, so he had really good healing ability. So I was like, okay, so we'll show that he's, like, this super great guy. And honestly, he was only in that episode. I did not have a continuing storyline for David Horselhoff, but you guys hated him so much, I had to bring him back and, like, make him part of your crew. Because...
that's terrible.
Because I thought that would be hilarious.
We're all eternally grateful for
him. Yeah. Oh, David Horselhoff.
Because, like, the scene at the end of The Kingdom Burns, or whatever that episode was called,
And we texted about this, but literally I said, what the fuck, in the episode, because
I was like, I was so shocked
that David just ripped somebody in half.
Like, just picked them up over their head, over his head, and just tore their body in half.
Like,
I loved that moment, and also it made, like, all of the other bullshit that we had to deal with David for so much better, because it's like, all right, now we get to kill this asshole because he's possessed and also because he's an asshole.
Yeah, that was my idea, and that didn't come to me until much later, because I was like, we have these two figures that you have animosity towards, the sorcerer and David Horselhoff, and I was like, oh, he could possess David, and then it's like the ultimate villain, and then you guys also have some sort of a connection to it as well, so I was really excited about that. But in the next kind of session that we did, you guys met Bert. And the way that the previous episode ended, like, it was a huge downer. Because you guys accidentally, like, killed the girl. Lazarus had died. Like, and I was kind of bummed because you guys were kind of bummed. And what was supposed to happen was you guys met Bert in the woods. You figured out the murder. And you met Bert in the woods. And he explained himself, and I fully expected you guys to handcuff him. I even said that as Bert, like, oh, you can cuff me and take my weapons. Because what was going to happen originally was you guys were going to wake up and he would be, the handcuffs would just be on the table. And there'd be a note saying, meet me here, put on these bandit outfits, I'll get you in to talk to the assassins. I just had something to do real quick. As kind of like a, oh, this guy's really good. And what you're going to do was he was going to tell you you guys were meeting at the Assassin's Den, kind of like what happens in the current one, but it would be this big manor, and you guys would go in dressed as bandits, and it was supposed to be an auction, like a charity auction where they were auctioning off all these different things, and there was going to be a large diamond. And so you guys were going to walk in as bandits into the room of all these, like, proper dressed up people doing this charitable thing. And they were going to freak out and kick you out of there, and you guys would have to find your way in to find Bert, because he was going to be dressed as a woman as you guys were getting pushed out and kind of wave at you and then dart up the stairs. And he was going to be dressed as a woman going, bandits, bandits! Kind of like what happens in the episode.
I love both of those, and I'm kind of sad that the second one didn't happen.
I know, but there's a really good reason it didn't. Because you guys...
But like, so for me, like, I trusted him off the bat. I was all for trusting Bert after he gave us back our things.
Yeah.
Because, like, he didn't need to do that.
And with Bert in that whole session and the way it was originally scripted with you guys getting kicked out and having to find Bert again in this charity auction, we were going to explore stealth more. And having you guys kind of like sneak in and stop this heist from happening. And then you'd also find out he has a target on someone in a bedroom that you walk in on him while he's about to kill them. And he kind of explains his case on why he's doing this, why he was hired to do this. And that was going to be a big part of the conversation. So I cut and redid it because I was like, we just had this really bummer one. And then there's going to be this one that had a lot of, like, morality in it. And it was planned to be kind of slow. And I kind of wanted to reward you guys with something crazy and fun and out there. So that's where the dinosaurs versus dragon came in. Which was... I wouldn't change it for anything because that's one of my favorite episodes of the Digging Fields.
Where I got the T-Rex.
Yeah, you tricked me.
Well, technically, she didn't trick you, because she can actually do that. She can turn.
I know.
I looked at all the lists of, like, all the things that she can turn into, and I can too, actually.
I thought about it. Why can't it turn into all the other dinosaurs?
Because you didn't establish a connection with them.
But I've seen them.
Is it just sight?
I don't know. It's just a list. Like, she just has a list. But maybe hers is, like, a bond thing, but mine's just a list. Like, I can just do it. Like,
yeah, you have, like, polymorph. She has wild shape. I think she needs to have, like, a connection with it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure it says an animal that I've, like, seen or encountered.
Oh, okay. I was going more off of, like, the encountered.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, let me know. Either way, you're not turning into a bunch of different dinosaurs. I'm DM ruling that. But I...
Okay, but no, I remember... I'm going to say that we should veto that, because I would totally like to have my Pteranodon back, and then I could ride River into battle. Like, I'm totally fine with that. Also, can I keep that wingsuit?
No.
Okay.
So, one interesting thing about the digging fields is that, I don't know if you guys remember this from listening to it or being a part of it, but there was one door that was already open and empty.
Too far back, I can't remember that.
Yeah, so when you first see this thing, you see all these closed doors.
I thought that there was five doors. One was open, and that's the one that Bert went into.
There was six, and five were closed, and Bert went into the fifth one.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, so that was just kind of fun. And Bert, seeing you guys fight Nicholas Mage, that was something spur the moment, because Geralt was giving himself a bad time about killing Lazarus, and I didn't want him to feel like that. So I kind of said something as Bert, like, oh, you know, it wasn't your fault. And then I was like, well, shit, why did I place him there? That makes no sense. So then I had to go back, and I had to literally map out how it all worked out. So this is what I came up with. Bert had a target and was traveling through the woods, and you guys having a fight with Lazarus, as Nicholas Mage would have made quite a bit of noise, casting spells, battling and yelling and fighting and all that kind of stuff. So as he was traveling to his spot to set up camp, he heard it and kind of looked through the bushes and kind of saw the tail end of how everything went on. And then you guys followed the spirit of Lazarus into the woods after he died, and you moved on. But you never did anything with his weapons or armor. So Bert took body spray and his other axes because he was like, oh, cool weapons, and stole them because he's a thief. And that's why he has them at the end when Lazarus comes back and hands them back to him.
Ah.
So, yeah. But I needed a reason for why that worked. So I had to, like, go back and literally map out a whole story of something that I just said in a dumb moment.
That's funny.
I do want to say one big moment that really kind of upset me as a DM. Was you guys going against Elzira and when she was resurrecting Exio Lavershine in the castle at the end. Because I left in, and you can hear it in the podcast, of me like saying some little thing and then stopping. Because I'm waiting for you guys to be like, hey, what's going on? Or like asking a question. And literally, it makes me laugh now, because she's like, ah, yes, he will be very happy with this. And then there's like a pause, and then Erebus is like, how high is the ceiling? And I'm like, dude, just ask a question. I got story I'm trying to get you guys involved in.
Then I'd be like, we were all like kind of stunned on like what to do. Like, I think that's the whole reason that Topher decided to just like cook a fish in the middle of this fucking room, was because we were all like, I have no fucking idea what to do with this.
Yeah, and the person I'm most disappointed in is Geralt. Geralt would ask any person or a rock that's willing to listen if they've ever heard of the sorcerer or anything they have done. And then there's two people literally talking about it, and he doesn't ask one question. And I was like, damn it.
Well, like he said, we were trying to be stealth, which we were using stealth improperly.
Yeah.
We didn't get a good description of the room, and so we were trying to get the description. And so it was all of us going back and forth, basically at a stalemate, because we were all trying to do something different, and so none of it got done.
Yeah, it was it's really funny now when I listen to it, because I know what it was supposed to be, and it's so totally not that. So you can hear me like trying to cram in information.
I think at one point you actually asked us to ask them a question.
Yeah, I think so. I may have edited it.
Yeah,
edited
you may have edited
that part out.
But
do you want to maybe ask them?
Yeah, it was like, do you want to like talk to this person or what?
Yeah, because I'm just sitting on like literally 2 pages of fucking notes. bringing Lazarus back and bringing his family back was a really hard decision for me, because I wasn't going to, first of all, but you guys showed so much interest in finding the sorcerer. I was like, okay, well, I don't want to take that away from them. I don't want to break it to them like, oh no, he's dead. So that's what first got me to the Titan and Mage story. So your reaction to that, I quickly came up with these pieces and listened back to the episodes, looked at the sessions I had written, and just put in extra little pieces with little marks like, oh, say something about this, and that'll tie into something later. Or, ooh, I'll have him say something like this after something that I had already written. Just to kind of plant seeds about what was going on. Because Exio Lavershine was going to be the big boss that you guys fought at the end of my sessions. He was going to be just like the big bad guy that you came across. You know, I wanted to do something with vehicles. That's why there's the ship one. I wanted a monster battle. That's why Erebus gets huge. I wanted you guys to fight like a big, huge, nasty boss, which was Exio, that you guys actually like kicked his butt a super good amount. So I incorporated this idea in there where he kind of talks about his power, and I have Smartledore mention like, oh, Elzira wasn't a super powerful person, so when she resurrected him, it was kind of on at her level, so he wasn't back full strength, you know? So, because I'm like, oh, this guy slaughtered hundreds of thousands of people. He took down an entire army that tried invading his castle, but he fell at the end of it. And then it's like four people and you kick his butt so quick. And I had so many cool little like vampire things I was going to have him do, but you were knocking his health down so much. I was just like, oh, well, I can't do that right now. The Bard Simpson episode, Topher.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing missing from that episode that was my all-time favorite, like, memory, but because our audio tracks got mixed up, we had to cut part of it and then re-record just our own retelling of stuff that happened. But one part that was missed was Bard Simpson's name reveal.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, and that was one of the parts that was missing. You don't find it out until conversation later when we're all playing that his name is Bard Simpson. But literally when you said Smartledore introduced him as Bard Simpson, I laughed for probably a good 5 minutes. Like, that tickled me real good.
I chuckle out of it.
I just felt like we should... I was, you know, I was inspired by Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, Burt Reynolds. Yeah, my naming has been interesting. Speaking of names and characters and stuff, why don't we talk a little bit about our characters and what inspired us to make them? Like, kind of, are there parts of you in there in your character that you wanted to incorporate? And what were you hoping to accomplish with this character? So, River, do you want to go first?
Sure. I don't really know what River's built after. I guess there's a little bit of me in there in the animal loving part, which is one of the reasons I went with Druid.
And the hermit part.
And the hermit part. That's my husband. I love the magic part. I like being able to do magic. I don't really like the weapons part. That's of
solitude.
The
solitude.
Yeah.
And the druid magic is pretty powerful, and they have some pretty sweet spells, so
yeah. I can't believe how cool that is.
Yeah, some of it's like things that I like, animals and nature, and then some of it's just the game mechanics that I like, magic versus weapons, and a chance to have more of an in-depth story, I guess, with like mysterious with the hermit and stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, I didn't put too much thought into it and until we started playing, and then you start thinking about things that you want your character to be able to do or pieces of their story. Like, once you started playing is when I thought about it more.
Yeah.
Because I never played D&D before, so you just build a character not really knowing what the game will be like. So
And they kind of evolve from there.
Right. The first few sessions are when a lot of character development happened about what I wanted River to be or do.
Yeah. And one of the first things you turned into was a tiger. And I remember writing your origin story, you saving a tiger that was going to be a part of some sort of entertainment, because after reading, like, oh, you know, you can wild shape after coming into contact with something, I was like, oh, she turned into a tiger that one time. I was like, how am I going to explain tigers when I haven't incorporated any tigers into anything?
I was just trying to think of animals you'd encounter in the wild. Like,
yeah.
Tiger. I'm sure I've met one of those before. Like, because it was supposed to be something that you'd seen before with wild.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, a tiger makes sense. I don't know why I didn't pick a deer or maybe.
No, yeah. And tiger was perfect because I loved the inclusion of Hobbs.
Right.
And I got really sad writing kind of that idea out there, and you guys were awesome with your origin stories and making them really cool and allowing me a little bit of ground. I really didn't want to write your story for you, but I wanted to kind of put in pieces to help, like, give you an experience during your origin story that you would surprise you, so it seemed like it was in the moment. While also adding an extra bit of, like, depth to it. Well, so I
haven't had much time to listen to a lot of our podcasts back, but I was listening to my origin story the other day. And I like that a little bit was a mystery to me as we were playing it, because it made it seem like it was, like, live action, the story, you know? It wasn't in the past. It was, like, really happening. Because I didn't know everything that was coming up, so that was kind of cool. It made it more interesting to listen to, I think.
Yeah. Geralt.
Well, two things. One, I chose a wizard because I always play magic users and casters in pretty much any, like, RPG kind of game, like World of Warcraft and all that kind of stuff. I played a caster, and so it was comfortable to me. I think they're high DPS and they're fragile, so you have to kind of play smart, and they also have a lot of spells, so you really have to think about how you're going to use them effectively to help your team and not just, like, be you know, all damage or all charm or all, you know, dominating or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So trying to play a character, I also wanted to play a character that was sort of neutral, and wizards can be very neutral because they're you know, they're clever and they're adventurous, but they're also, like, you know, studious and well learned, and so they don't really have, like, they're not going to be in law enforcement, and they're not going to you know, necessarily do evil except for, like, sorcerers and stuff. So yeah. I wanted to pick a neutral character, so that's also it. And then also, Adrian and I, before we played, we talked about what we were going to be, and I gave her the option of what she wanted to be, and I said, if you pick a certain character, then I'll be the healer of the group, because I knew we needed to be a healer.
Yeah.
And she chose the druid, so that gave me the freedom to choose the wizard, which is what I really wanted to play.
Ah, kismet.
And then Geralt is named after Geralt the Binacorn from from Taz. I think we'll know that. And the last name, Embersoul, I just came up with as, like, I don't know, something that I thought was kind of elementally related, because that's what Genesi are.
Yeah.
They're elementals. Anyway, and then, I don't know what else to talk about. I mean, there's a lot of Geralt in there, or a lot of Matt in Geralt, I should say. I mixed those words around. There's a lot of me in Geralt, loyalty and analytical. There you go. And he tries to think his way out of a lot of stuff, and I do the same thing. I like a lot of options in my life, and I think that Geralt does too. So.
I think that comes out.
I don't know. He's fun, and I would say that he's 50% me, at least.
Yeah.
If not more.
Yeah, and you mentioned how you came up with your name, River. Your name is based on a couple of shows, correct?
It's based off
Doctor
one.
Doctor Who.
Oh, just Doctor Who. Uh-huh. Okay.
after River cool. Songs.
Nice. Topher.
I knew I didn't want to do a crazy voice. So yeah. It's my voice, just to make it easier to roleplay. Topher, I made him, so my friends were doing a D&D campaign, and I had never played before, but I wanted to try it, and I had to make a character, and so that's why, obviously. We did it old school with, like, a character sheet.
Yeah.
And one of the options in the character sheet was flaws, like character flaws. And mm-hmm. I watched a lot of anime, and all the main characters in anime are just, like, perverts. And it's really funny. It sounds strange, but it's, like, it's just really funny. Because these are, like, kids' cartoons, but they're, like, characters are, like, asking to see girls' panties and stuff. And it sounds really weird, but it's always funny because it just seems out of place. So I thought it would be funny for Topher to be like that, to be sort of like a pervert or like always trying to sleep with girls. So that was just kind of fun. And that kind of, because that's the only character trait that I had really thought about, everything else sort of is me. But that is so, because that one thing was something that I decided to make him, it comes to encapsulate a fair amount of his character, the way he's like flirting with girls all the time. And then I wanted to be a ranger because I like the idea of living in the wild and being kind of a bit of a, you know, like a ranger, a lone ranger, you know. Sort of like Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. And I wanted to be an archer. I knew that because I used to play this game and it had, like, you could level up your characters, and one of the abilities was agility, and if you got your agility maxed out, you could just stand in the back and shoot arrows the whole time and, like, beat the game really quickly, and it was a really fun way to play, so I figured I'd just kind of do the same thing with D&D, just, like, max out my guy's agility and shoot arrows constantly. because even though it's more of a realistic game when you're actually playing D&D as far as, like, what you can do, it was still a lot of fun, and I figured that would be a fun way to kind of develop. Other than that, yeah, character is kind of like River said, or Adrian, it really, after you start playing, you start tweaking and you start to like your character and start to want them to be more in depth. And I think doing the origin stories, we'll have to do more, helps a lot and brings a lot of, makes you think about your character a little bit more. Because really, ultimately, it's just how much do you think about a character when you play a video game? You know, you don't think about it much, you just pick them and play. So, I think it's after you start playing that you really develop them more. But, yeah. And then Topher is a version of my name, and Biznatch is just funny. So
that's awesome.
Tell us about Asterix and Bert.
Oh, sure. How about I do one of them, and then we'll jump into Erebus, and then I'll do the other one.
Okay.
Well, we'll do Lazarus. He was actually my second character. Bert was technically the first character I came up with and wrote out to play, but rogues never playing D&D before, they do a lot of sleight of hand, stealth. You know, I wanted him to be very much about performance because I wanted him to be able to lie his way through things. Well, I guess I'm kind of talking about Bert now, but that I had no concept of how any of that works. So I was like, I'll just be a guy who goes in and smashes things. Like, that's easy. I could roleplay that and figure that out a lot quicker. So I looked at some of the other kind of tank characters, but Barbarian didn't have anything that really dabbled in spells. It was just kind of like, oh, he has an ability where he just gets angry. Like, okay. Like, that's easy. So I created Lazarus, and I kind of started to shape him and his dark backstory, because I like characters who are heroes, not because they're necessarily good at it. It's not something that they were raised to be. It's something that they kind of have to be. They're like forced into achieving something and being something great, and a lot of times that's through adversity. So there's always the trope of like, oh, these people killed my family and children, now I'm out to get them, but I wanted to do a twist where it was like he did it, and that's what he has to live with through his life. So he's kind of a wanderer who would get into battles and scraps, looking for an honorable death. Like, he didn't want to go on, so he'd find fights and conflicts to get into and then hopefully be killed in on the field of battle. And I kind of built his character in the angry barbarian guy kind of out of the part of me that is like my anger. There's a theme with my characters. Lazarus is the side of my anger. I have actually a pretty bad temper, but I get to like express that part of me as that character and just be like, yep, let's just be angry and do all these bad things that I would never do in real life, but it's therapy for me in D&D. And Lazarus was a name that I've always loved for a long time. Always wanted to name a kid Lazarus. My wife wasn't super fond of it. And it doesn't quite work for a girl, I guess. And then Crag, like, that just kind of flowed. Like, there's nothing really behind Crag, except I was trying to come up with last names, and Crag came out, and it was just like Lazarus Crag. Like, that seems to work out really well.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will give you a little hint about the finale. In the finale, you will find out what Lazarus's wife's name is, because you guys have never asked. So a little tease for you. Josh, you want to tell us about Erebus and try not to be in a pool?
How about this?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Nailed it.
So as far as Erebus, like, as far as like the name, I just really thought that it was like, it was something cool. I played with a lot of name generators when I was trying to figure out his name, and none of them were like anywhere near cool. So then I just started like looking up like random things, and I was like, oh, Erebus, done. And then nice. As far as like why he became a fighter, like, honestly, Matt was like, hey, we're playing D&D and we need a fighter. You want to come play D&D with us? And I was like, sure, I'll be a fighter. And had
I was going out as barbarian, and we killed Lazarus, so we needed someone to fit in the melee role.
So, Erebus was a lot of like not understanding anything about D&D or what I was really doing for the first couple of levels, which I think honestly is why like I wrote when my DM campaign came around, like I wrote it around multiclassing Erebus because I really like I was kind of tired of being just a fighter, and I didn't see. Like, I was trying to work with, like, the Assassin's Guild to, like, learn different things, but, like, none of them were really, like, even giving me the time of day, so I was like, fuck it, I'm DMing, I can do what I want. So I was like, I'm a warlock now. And, like, if... So, like,
yeah, so, I rolled so about how many
entirely wrong.
Yeah, so how many times did you redo?
Honestly, I have lost track. Probably, like, realistically, 4 or 5. Because like, I re-rolled it to be, like, a grappler, and then I was like, okay, now I'm a great grappler, but that's really not, like, advantageous when we're fighting at all. And so, like, I re-rolled it again, and I was like, okay, well, now I'm better with my weapons, but... You know, I can only do so much, which is why I think I dipped into the whole warlock thing, was because like now I have some flexibility. Like I can be, I can still be the tank and have a high AC and a high health, but I can also like shoot from range and cover our back line basically.
Yeah,
better as far as. You know, rather than just be like, you know, okay, well, I'm 5 feet away from this guy and everyone else is 30 feet away. Like, now I have some options as far as distance and everything. I always tend to tend to like go in the middle, where like Geralt is very analytical and thinks through everything, and you know, then there's other people that are like just like inherently evil, and they're like, I want everything regardless of the cost. I was kind of in the middle, more like a lawful neutral sort of person. So I'm pretty pleased with like the balance of like I can still be mischievous, but also like I'm fighting for the greater good regardless of you know what happens in the interim of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty happy with Erebus. And then as far as the backstories, I do want to say I loved how the backstories went. It was way more fun to record and hopefully more fun to listen to than me just writing out a 5-page backstory and reading it to you.
Yeah.
You know, I had a ton of fun with that, and it really helped me dive into my character more and be more invested in my character. So I was.
You can only find the voice.
I know, dude. I
the mystic voice.
Like, the voice that came out there, I don't know what happened to it. Like,
lost the time.
It's gone, dude. It's just gone. I have tried so hard, and, like, you can probably hear in some of the later episodes where I, like, try to throw in this, like, odd, random Irish / Scottish / English voice, and then I'm just like, no, fuck it, that was terrible, I can't do that voice.
No, he's just setting us up for the twist that we're gonna find out. He's a doppelganger, and he died in his backstory, and like, that's why he doesn't have the accent. No, yeah, I know that you re-rolled your stats a few different times, and that was tough to kind of ride around to figure out, because every time it was like there was something different. No, yeah, and in the end, we don't want you to play a character, first of all, if you don't know what you're doing and you roll it wrong and it's bad. I don't want you to have to be stuck with a character that, like, sucks. Like, yeah, that's not fun. But
I appreciate all of you understanding that I had no idea what I was doing, and that I was just going to continue to re-roll something until I figured that out. So I really do appreciate it.
Yep, no problem. Just no more.
No.
Yeah, and then I guess I'll say Bert. Bert, like I was saying before, he was my first character because I generally don't try to go stealthy or sneaky routes, and I wanted to have a character that could go through something without having to kill anyone. So I focused on like his performance, and in my head, I still have lots of interactions that I could do with Bert to try and trick people, because he juggles and he has a makeup kit, he can impersonate people's voices, he has all of these like abilities now in the rogue class to where he can really like go through and pose as different people, and in the future I've found ways to make those make sense with more of kind of a game mechanic, which will be revealed in the future. But Bert, I kind of, the whole like emotional anesthetic, the EA that he takes in his backstory to kind of calm him down so he forgets about the things he had done, I kind of modeled that after depression. So I kind of had Lazarus for my issues with anger, and Bert is kind of my struggles with depression, of kind of like numbing and kind of going through life as just kind of like, oh, hey, I'm going through the motions, I'm talking to you with inflection, but like River's conversation with Bert in the penultimate episode, where she sees him talking and like having an argument, but he's very cool, but there's kind of nothing behind the eyes. That's kind of my representation of depression, basically. So Bert is like super personal to me with like how I've characterized him, and you know, the idea of him bringing Lazarus's family back and all that through magic. I like to think that he doesn't really know how to use magic, but he's been shown how to cast from magic documents, because he kind of had to do that in his job. So he himself isn't magic. The thing he's reading is a conduit, and he needs that. In that Book of Risen Veil, like, that was my way of inputting, like, there's a powerful magic beyond what you guys understand. So, and that's, you know, Risen Veil and the gods and all that kind of stuff. So him bringing back Lazarus was to say, like, whoa, this book is crazy, and there is an insane magic we don't really know about. And then him bringing back the family was my way of trying to get you guys to trust Bert, like, completely. Like, he's going to do these things to try and be like, hey, you know, I'm not the enemy. Like, and that's why I've tried helping Bert grow. The more time he spends with you, he realizes, like, maybe I'm on the wrong side of things and kind of starting to come around. So that's been important in my story of trying to figure out that character. I will say, another little tease, there will be a character in the future that I have put together based on Joy. And I'm really excited to introduce that character. But I'm not going to say anything else about it.
Bert's backstory was probably my favorite backstory. And that's including my own and Geralt's, which were, like, huge for me.
But, like, that tied in so many more things in his backstory. And, like, it was
absolutely amazing how that was written out. So I applaud both you and Chris.
Oh, man. I just kind of had the idea. I had to fill Chris in on, like, there's this thing that Bert is taking that kind of numbs him to everything that's going on because he's had a traumatic past. And that's all I told Chris, and I was like, run with everything else. And the train set piece was awesome. I loved that. And all the other stuff that was in there. What really bummed me out was I was in so, like, DM mode from doing it so long during that backstory. I kept saying, Bert does this, and he does this, instead of, like, I'm going to. Because I was so out of the realm of playing as a character.
I think we all do that as far as, like,
you know, I say Erebus does this. Like, we don't all have character voices.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I, as Josh, can't just be like,
oh, yeah, no, I do that.
I will say Chris did a ton with the Bert backstory, and he did an amazing job. So props to him.
I applaud you both. That was by far my favorite backstory. And that's including my own, which I fucking love.
Yeah, I think we all really liked our backstories. I think they, as a whole, they were probably one of the most successful things that we've done. Maybe it's because it was a one-on-one and we didn't have as much of the other distraction. Or yep. It could be that the story was already, you know, sort of told. And so being able to pick those pieces out and add some more depth to them made them more meaningful.
Yeah.
They're one of my favorite parts of this whole thing as well.
Me too. So that's kind of jumping into characters. I want to talk a little bit about the future. As I told you guys, I wrote Act 1 of this season as four very distinct different things. So I don't like how the story flows through there. I worked with Josh just a little bit and Chris just a little bit for Act 2 to just kind of put in continuing story pieces here and there. And then Act 3 kind of has a different feel and flow. Season 2 is going to be very unique because I'm writing it out as one whole thing. And I don't know where you guys will end in a session. While the other ones, it was like, okay, here's the beginning, here's the end for this day. Here's the beginning, here's the end for this day. So as we record Season 2 and in the sessions you'll hear, they may end in more kind of an open space because I won't be able to tell exactly how much time this thing will take and how much time this thing will take because I'm writing it knowing what the story is and as a whole. And also we are going to have two storylines. I'm not going to go into exactly how that's going to play out or what it will entail, but Chris will be handling the other storyline. So how this first season kind of had Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, the second one will kind of have that, but it's not going to necessarily have, like, full-on breaks, like how we jump to Josh DMing an entirely separate story and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be very different. But I'm excited about it. I've told you guys before, I have tons of different seasons and stories in mind, and all of them are very different in tone. But season two, I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be really interesting. It's going to expand things a lot, including characters and story and ideas. It's going to be a lot of fun. So kind of like in between things, we'll mix in some fun news stories, switch up DMs, all that kind of stuff. One thing I'm really excited about is when we complete a season, I'm going to do a wild card episode, which is outside of our reality and realm of talking, kind of like the video game session that I did that we did non-recorded, kind of along the lines of like incorporating kind of pop culture sillier things that aren't true to our world but are just fun to do.
I know, I really wish that session would have been recorded.
That was a good one.
The video game one,
yeah.
That one was awesome.
Okay, well, I think that's going to kind of wrap it up, I think. Maybe we can end it on everyone's favorite scene so far from the podcast.
Ooh.
Want me to go first?
I'll go with kind of a more of a negative one. Not really a negative, but...
Yeah.
I really like it, but I also really hate it when we're tricked as players.
Do you have a specific moment? We all know where this is going.
when David Horselhoff stood before us, but it really wasn't him.
Oh yeah, in the cabin.
You as the DM and the bad guy had the chance to kill us because we were being so dumb by not like thinking about either, you know, restraining him or attacking him or doing anything, and it was just like it really made me mad because even if we would have done something, it wouldn't have helped anything.
Yeah.
And so
and the whole idea on why he didn't attack you was because there were four of you and doppelgangers aren't exceptionally strong, so he just wanted to kind of get you guys out of there and off the scent.
Oh, I'm talking about it like after Hagrid's when we all went.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think probably for me, is the audio okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I think for me, probably my favorite moment was fighting the giant dragon turtle.
Nice.
And like, even though it wasn't like an exceptionally long fight, it was just a really cool moment to be like an actual dragon as Erebus, and to be able to fight this gigantic thing and go toe to toe with it, and that was a lot of fun for me. That was definitely by far like my favorite moment as far as like what I got to do in the podcast.
River, wanna go?
It's Adrian.
Adrian.
I feel like you call me River more than you call anyone else by their character names.
Probably. Yeah.
It just fits funny. You.
I guess. I don't know if I have a favorite moment. My favorite session, the doppelganger, maybe it was when we found out the doppelganger was a doppelganger. Mm-hmm. I love it when nobody like has caught on and then we all have that aha moment together. Like, I feel like none of us really knew what was coming, and then we figured it out like all around the same time, and it was pretty like exciting. It made the game more fun. That was probably my favorite.
Yeah, the chair reveals of you guys revealing the people tied up in the chairs was one of my favorite things to watch.
And the twist and you know all that was really exciting. It made you want to know what was going to happen next, and like all the little things that you had been doing throughout the session kind of clicked, and we figured it out like all at once. And
yeah,
that was probably my favorite little piece.
I liked the mystery aspect of that session.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, I said, let's be honest, none of us really figured out anything. Why we killed the little girl.
I was just going to say, one of our earlier sessions when Chris DM'd and we had the bards playing beer pong. That was also really fun.
The monks. Oh,
the monks?
The monks.
Yeah, the monks.
Yeah.
I think it was important for all you guys to get drunk together, and that was a really fun time because it felt like not only us as people, but the characters really bonded, and I enjoyed that. Yeah.
I really like that session.
So, Chris, what was your favorite part?
I was going to say it was really fun, even though I was DMing the monk session, because that was still early on when we didn't really know what we were doing, and it was so much fun. I mean, it's still really fun, but now it's more of like a tradition, whereas then it was like we were just flying by the seat of our pants kind of a thing. And when it was so fun, it like came as more of a surprise, where now you go to D&D and you expect to have a ton of fun. I really enjoyed the whole thing with Topher being super stealthy, like in this stupid joke, and you guys totally going along with it, like when we decided that he was hiding as a rug in the cabin already when they got there. Like silly things like that, just little things. This is little things that are really fun. But I think, like River was saying, when we all have this aha moment, I had no idea that you were going to bring Lazarus back, and when you did, I was like, oh my gosh, it's so perfect. And so that was like a really big moment for me, where it was like, this is so surprising. And it's just a great feeling when you're surprised by a story that your friend totally made up, you know?
Yeah.
Like that great feeling that you get from watching a TV show when you get surprised, but like that much better because it's just intimate with friends.
Yeah. I think my favorite part, I mean, DMing, there's lots of fun moments, like when you guys all opened up your cards and found dinosaurs, and I got to tell you you're going to ride dinosaurs in a battle. All your reactions were great. But I think hands down the winner for me is Geralt's murder of Garland with the explosive beads.
That was funny.
That was the funniest thing, because those explosive beads were originally supposed to be explosive beans, like the food beans, and I was like, well, I can't put those in there because one of them will eat them, and then I'm gonna have to make their head explode.
It would have been me.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, so I'll make them beads. And then you rolled the nat 20 on strength, and I, like, in the podcast, you can hear me like, should I? Like, how should I go about this? But I think the death of Garland was one of the funniest, like, laugh-out-loud moments. The whole prison thing was great, which, that one, I just wanted you guys to talk a lot. So, like, character interaction and building trust and all that kind of stuff. That's why that session was in there. And to kind of introduce the canceling of magic, and then the benefit of getting all that back at the end.
Beautiful.
All right, so I thought maybe a fun thing to kind of end this on is perhaps a tease for the finale. I'm just going to read to you the first few lines that start out this final session for season one. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, go.
The cities are empty. Lands are abandoned. In a classroom under the grand halls of Hogwarts, an old woman is reading a book to students. She looks at their faces as they smile, laughing along with the story. And in between those moments, she glances at the door, knowing any minute destruction could enter. Smarteldor is sitting in his office, one that no one necessarily knows where it is, with his hands resting on his cane, looking at the ceiling, counting the seconds. Families are huddled in rooms across the school, hoping, praying, for you to prevail. Hello, this is Corey, and thank you for listening to this bonus episode. I just have a couple quick notes, some things I forgot to talk about, a couple of them very important. One of the things I forgot to talk about is One Last Night, our last real episode that we did, where everyone gets together and drinks in the cabin and wanted to do something without a lot of rules. The point of that episode, the main point of that episode was, I love Norse mythology. It's my favorite. And it was kind of my take on Valhalla, and because in Norse mythology, the dead go to Asgard and the halls of Valhalla, and they drink and they eat, and it's all like the best warriors. But in Norse mythology, there's Ragnarok, not like the Thor movie, but there's Ragnarok, which is the Norse apocalypse. And it's interesting because they know it will happen. The end of the world will happen. It's fact. And along with that, they know that they will die. Thor, Odin, you know, what's supposed to be the good guys, they all die. And what's interesting about that is that they eat and they tell stories and they go on their little adventures and they do all these things knowing that eventually their world will end and they will die. Obviously there's a little bit more detail about a couple survivors, but and how life kind of restarts, but they don't spend their time like scheming, trying to figure it out, how to stop it, how to do all this. They are there together waiting to fight and drinking and being merry. Like, I find that incredibly interesting. Also see that it's not just these people, it's happening to the world, and what this has done, this terrible thing that is happening, is it's brought them together. The whole world's in this. Obviously there's some groups that are deciding to kind of stay back, kind of secretly hoping everything works out so they don't die, but mostly everyone in this world has come together under one roof and under one hope of defeating this evil, and they're together, happy, spending their time not worrying, but, you know, soaking in these moments because it could be their last. And the song was very important because that's the moment when they're watching and seeing this young, handsome man singing a song and seeing him emotional, singing these words, and it sinks in because they are not gods. You know, they haven't lived their lives and are in this special place. They're mortals, and it starts to weigh on them in that moment. So that was kind of my idea for that, and with the two storylines, I stressed out for days and weeks and months leading up to it, trying to figure out the balance, which I don't know if I pulled it off 100%, but it was good enough to move the story along. The second thing, and this is the big one, Gwendolyn and Sadie, when they first appeared in the hotel, and Erebus is flirting with them, and Topher comes in and flirts with them, and they kind of fawn over these two people, I felt sick after that episode, because I had just represented two women terribly, and so I needed to reconcile that. That's why they came back, because I couldn't sit there and let myself take these two warriors that I had put in there, and in a stupid moment let two idiots come up and talk to them and have them be like, oh, you're so special, oh, you poor thing, you're crying. No, that sucks, that's awful, and I felt bad about representing them that way. So that's why I brought them back and kind of wrote them in as them being a ploy, because fantasy is tough. If you try to look up anything, we have different avatars for our characters that we use on Roll20. It was really hard to find a female character that was not super thin in bikini armor. For some reason, women are incapable of wearing normal armor in most fantasy stuff that you see, and it drives me crazy. So I had to bring them back, and I want them to be ferocious, deadly, strong, capable warriors. They don't need to be searching for some dudes to come in and try to be like, oh, you poor thing. It's ridiculous. You know, in the world we are creating, it's important for me that the women are not just one size, different body types, different personalities, strong, which I've loved seeing River grow, because I think she is probably one of the strongest characters, and her powers and the things she's capable of doing are insane. And I think we'll see more of that in the future. But that's just one thing I wanted to get out there, because it killed me after the first time, and I really tried putting them together. And if it's not overly obvious, they are a couple, and that's not anything we're going to go too huge into, because it's just like any other thing in this world. So there's no reason to be like, oh, look at these two. No, they're just people who love each other and respect each other and are together, just like anyone else would be. So that was Gwendolyn and Sadie. Now, we're on track to record the finale. I'm going to try to edit that in time, so in 2 weeks, the full finale should post, hopefully. And it's going to be wild. I'm excited for everyone to hear it. I'm excited for the players to play through it. It will be insane. I've pored over this thing for a very long time, and I think it will be highly enjoyable. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you for hanging in there during this kind of hiatus. And I hope you enjoy, and thank you.